play with my dragon. Give it back right now.
One day, Fox was tormenting poor little rabbit.
We're stacking wood, we're canning and freezing food, we're getting the garden ready for the winter.
We love stories!
It's time for the Appleseed, filled with stories for you and your family. All kinds of tales from all kinds of tellers. We've been doing it since 2013, bringing you tall tales, personal tales, fairy tales, historical tales, and more. Now, have you ever been in a situation when you really needed someone to help you, someone to get you out of a sticky situation, teach you how to do your homework, or give you a push to go ahead and do that thing you're scared of? Today, we've got some great stories about just that. In today's episode, you'll hear stories about teamwork and helping hands coming from all sorts of places. And we're going to kick it off today with a story called Fox and Goldfinch from the wonderful storyteller Dovey Thomason. This is from a collection of stories called Voices of the Animal People. This is a tale with versions from all over the world. But this one is told in the Seneca or Onondaga Native American tradition from western New York and eastern Ohio. And in this story of a mean fox and some wise forest creatures, we learn that goodness cannot always be seen in the physical appearance, but rather is revealed by our actions. And sometimes the people who are most in need of our kindness are those who need to learn to be kind themselves. Here's Dovey Thomason with Fox and Goldfinch here on the Appleseed.
Grandma always said Fox had no friends. He was mean to the other animals. He called them names. He pulled their tails. He tore up things that were precious to them. He would steal their food, not because he was hungry, but so he could roll it in the dirt and they could not eat it. One day, Fox was tormenting poor little rabbit.
"Look at that tail. What a pitiful little tail."
He grabbed Rabbit's tail in his jaws.
"Your tail would not even fluff up if I were to shake it."
And he started to shake his head from side to side. Poor Rabbit was so frightened that he jumped away. And as he did, his tail broke off. Rabbit hopped to the other animals.
Look at my tail.
Look at what he did.
The fox grabbed my tail's gone.
I'm gonna jump in a hole and hide.
The other animals looked at each other.
Jump in a hole and hide? That is how we should deal with this fox, but we did nothing. Why should we have to jump in holes and hide?
Fox, he's the one who should have to live in a hole, but they knew they could not make that fox live in a hole. Deer would hear nothing of it.
I will not hide in a hole. I am too proud, I am too big, and I am strong. I will run away.
Run away? The other animal said.
Those are our choices, to hide in a hole or to run away. Fox should have to go away. We did nothing. Why should we be punished? Because he is mean.
Fox needs to go, but they could not make him go, and they could not make him change.
Finally, the old raccoon spoke up. Fox is the one who needs to change. But we cannot change him. It must be in his mind and his heart to change. But perhaps we can put that thought in his mind. Here's what I want you to do.
And he leaned closer to the other animals and he told them his plan. The other animals smiled and nodded. It might work. And quickly they went off to do what Raccoon had told them to do. Soon they were scratching through the bark of many trees, and as their claws cut through the bark, a sticky sap called pitch started to drip. It is just like glue, and they gathered in their paws and brought it back to Raccoon. Soon Raccoon had two paws full of gooey pitch. He crept over to where Fox was sleeping in the light of morning, and carefully he patted that sticky pitch over Fox's eyes.
If he can't see us, he can't bother us. And this will give him time to think of how he has been. Quickly now,
hide in the bush and wait until he wakes up." And so all the animals hid in the bush, and after a time, Fox began to yawn and stretch himself awake.
What is wrong with my eyes? Oh, I know. I need to wash my face.
He turned to walk toward the river, but in two steps he tripped over a rock.
Whoa!
He turned and went in another direction, but now he smashed into a tree.
Whoa! I cannot find the river. If I cannot find the river, I cannot wash my face, and I cannot drink either. What is wrong with my eyes? I could see fine before I went to sleep.
Now he reached up to his eyes and felt
sticky pitch. Who has glued my eyes shut? Whoever did this, when I get my eyes clean, I am going to eat you.
The animals looked from one to another. Raccoon's plan had made things worse. Now Fox was threatening to eat them. But Raccoon just shook his head.
It takes time to want to change. What is this?
Fox started to tear at his eyes, ripping at the sticky pitch, but soon he figured out that his sharp claws could damage his eyelids, and then he would be blind for real.
I cannot get this off my own eyes. Whoever did this to me, come and get this off my eyes, and then I am going to eat you.
Well, that is not the way to ask for help, and none of the animals came near when Fox spoke to them this way.
All right, come and get this off my eyes. I am growing impatient with you.
The animal still came no nearer, looking frightened from raccoon to the fox. Now the sun was getting higher and higher in the sky, till it was just above Fox, and its rays were beating down on him, burning him and making him thirstier and thirstier.
I need something to drink. If I cannot see, I cannot get to the river for water. If you will not get this pitch off of my eyes, at least bring me something to drink. If you do, well, maybe I will not eat you.
The animal still did not quite believe this fox. He had never asked for anything from them, and they came no closer. But there was something different in the way he was speaking. As the sun got hotter and the day grew longer, Fox began to moan and cry,
"Help! Help, please! I am dying of thirst. Help, bring me water, please!"
Now still the animals did not trust him, but the sun was moving closer and closer to the edge of the world, and Fox had a very frightening thought. Soon it would be dark, and in the dark there were big animals, animals bigger than a fox, animals who would not think twice about chasing a fox, frightening a fox, or even eating a fox.
Help me, please. Oh, help me, please. Soon it will be dark, and they will be coming, the big animals, bigger of jaw and claw than myself. Oh, please, I am frightened of them. You will help me. Oh, please, if you help me, I will help you. I don't know how. I have never done anything like that before, but I will try to do something nice. Just help me, please. Help me so I can see.
Now the animals saw that Fox was frightened, and they looked from one another, from raccoon to fox, and suddenly little birds, little dark gray birds, left the animals in the bush and began to move closer to that fox. He heard them rustling in the grasses.
"Are you mice? Are you mice come to help me? Oh, no, I have eaten many of your people. I am surprised you would help me at all."
But instead of mice, it was one of those little gray birds that fluttered up and landed on Fox's cheek and slowly started to peck and peck away at the pitch that covered his eyes. The other little birds grew frightened to see that one that was helping the fox, for it was their grandfather. "Grandpa? Grandpa? Be careful! careful. Don't help him. Don't help him. You are too close to his mouth, his jaws, his teeth. He will eat you. Do not trust him. But their grandfather turned and looked at them.
Should not some kindness be saved for those who need to learn how to be kind?
And he turned back to helping that fox, pecking and pecking away. Slowly the other birds fluttered up and took their place on Fox's cheek, helping their grandfather. And soon one of Fox's eyes was cleared. And then the other eye was cleared of the sticky pitch. And the first thing Fox saw was the sun as it dipped over the edge of the world. And it was a beautiful golden light, the most beautiful color he had ever seen. And then he looked from the sun to these little dark gray birds.
You help me? And look at you. You are so dull and gray. I thought you would be as beautiful as the sun itself. Such goodness is inside your hearts, but... Well, I guess all goodness does not show when first you look. But I can be sure I'll see the goodness that is within you, for I will make you as beautiful as the sun itself.
And he took his tail that had caused his problems with Rabbit that day, and began to roll his tail in the flowers of the field, gathering the golden pollen like a dusty paint, and he began to use that tail, brushing it over the bodies of those little birds, painting them a brilliant gold. But it tickled. And those birds flew away before they were painted golden all over their bodies, and the caps of their heads, some of their feathers on their back and wings, still are a deep dark gray, to this very day. For those birds are still with us, a little bird called a goldfinch. And Grandma always said when you see one of them, you should remember that the goodness of people is not always what you see at first, and perhaps some of our kindness should be saved for those who need to be taught how to be kind.
Fox and Goldfinch, a story told for you by Dovey Thomason. We're going to take a quick break, but then we'll be back with more stories, including a rhythmic tall tale from the Story Crafters, stories from Martha Hamilton and Jay O'Callaghan. And because we know that the sharing of personal and family stories can often be the spark that ignites a memory for you that you can share with the people that you love, I'll share with you a memory of mine about a mishap involving a brand new mustard-colored sofa. You won't want to miss it. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's great to have you back with us on today's episode of The Appleseed. Before the break, you heard Fox and Goldfinch, told for you by Dovey Thomason. In just a moment, because we know that great stories come into our lives in all kinds of different ways, we'll talk with our producer, Jeff Simpson, about a memory involving a drumstick, not the thing you hit a drum with, or the leg of a turkey or chicken. We're talking about the ice cream drumsticks that I used to love when I was a kid. But first, how about an entry in the Radio Family Journal?
The Radio Family Journal with Sam Payne. A tiny little story for you and your family. Right when you need it. On the Appleseed.
There's a family reunion coming up this year, or there probably is, there usually is, and with it, evenings sitting around telling family stories. Every time we get together, we share some family stories, and most of those stories are stories that we all know, part of the canon of the family stories. That's the first kind of story that gets shared at these kinds of events. But every once in a while, a story of another kind gets shared, the kind that no one has ever heard before, the kind that's making its debut at the family reunion. And here's a good candidate for that second kind of story. And I probably ought to start the story by saying right up front that I know my grandparents loved us, and I know they know that we loved them. Okay, that up front. Now, When I was a kid, my grandparents lived 700 miles away in a suburb of Oakland, California. And what that meant is that they had grandkids in their home only a few times a year. We'd manage to get out there for a good visit most summers, and we'd get out there most Christmases. And because they didn't get tons and tons of kid time at their house, there wasn't really any reason for them to have a super kid-friendly house. They hung art they loved on the walls, owned a beautiful grand piano and an Eames chair, glass coffee tables, and a red metal fireplace designed to within an inch of its life. My granddad drove a Grand Torino coupe for about half my childhood, and a Mercedes-Benz for the rest of my childhood, and winced every time we kids opened and closed the doors, afraid, he admitted loudly, that we might break them. So, when my grandparents were looking for a new sofa for the downstairs family room, the last thing on their mind was getting a sofa that would stand up to the roughhousing of a couple of little grandsons. They settled on a mustard-colored leather affair that folded out into a bed, which, of course, we loved. We were there visiting, actually, when the sofa arrived. We thought it was a great magic trick, seeing that enormous bed folding out from the sofa seats. And we thought the yellow leather was cool, too. But our favorite thing about the new sofa was that it was so incredibly bouncy. It was absolutely forbidden, of course, for us to do anything that even looked like jumping on that sofa. But how could we not jump on it? We bounced and wrestled and tumbled around on that sofa every time my grandparents left the room. I mean, how could we not? If you've ever been a kid, you understand, right? Anyway, so it was about 3 days after the sofa arrived. My grandparents had a morning's worth of errands to run, and we were going to stay at the house. And about 2 minutes after the car left the driveway, we were jumping on that yellow leather sofa. And about 3 minutes after the car left the driveway, either me or my brother, probably me, vaulted over the back of the sofa and heard the sound of a board splitting in two, and the back of the sofa went all slack. My dad had just come down the stairs and into the room, and he saw it happen. And I'll always remember him putting his hands behind his head and trying to hide behind his elbows as he realized what had happened to Grandma and Grandpa's, especially Grandpa's, brand new sofa under the full bouncing weight of his little boys. And I say especially Grandpa's new sofa because Grandma would likely not have kicked us out of the house and sent us the 700 miles back home if she had discovered what we had done. But Grandpa, we were as good as kicked out and would still be hearing about it today more than 40 years later, had not my dad gathered himself and more quickly than I've ever seen anyone move, flipped the sofa on its head, raided the garage for tools and a 2x4, and cut the fabric base of the sofa away from the frame, cut a board to size, screwed it to the broken board inside the sofa until it was good and stable, reinforced it with yet another board, sewed the fabric base of the sofa back in place, and flipped the whole thing back on its feet. My grandfather found us all sitting and watching television and not jumping on that good-as-new sofa when he got back home with my grandmother. And if he noticed that my dad was sweating a bit and breathing hard, he didn't say anything. This emergency repair of my grandparents' sofa remained a family secret for the rest of my grandparents' lives. My father never breathed a word, not for 4 decades, and we didn't either. So I guess this entry in the Radio Family Journal is a bit of coming clean, and coming clean in public at that. There are members of my family who will find out about this only when they hear this episode of the show. We'll see how things play at the next family reunion. Chances are there are similar secrets lurking in the memories my cousins have of their visits to Grandma and Grandpa's house. Frankly, the statute of limitations is probably up on the broken sofa crime, and it's stories like these that make family reunions come to delightful life. I wonder what I'll learn. I'll let you know how it goes.
The Radio Family Journal with Sam Payne. A tiny little story for you and your family. Right when you need it, on the Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for that entry in the Radio Family Journal. We always hope that the stories that we bring you here on the show spark memories and thoughts for you that you can share with the people that you love. Coming up, a story from the Story Crafters called The Big Red Beet. But first, how about a conversation with a friend? Great stories come into our lives in so many ways, through the things we see on screen, through the tales that we tell around the kitchen table or the living room or the campfire, through the songs that become part of our lives, through the books that we invite into our hearts, and of course, through the great food that we enjoy. Great food stories come back to us as tales that we can tell over and over again to the people that we love. And it's my pleasure to have in the studio with me Jeff Simpson, the producer of The Appleseed, to share a little bit of a food story. Jeff, it's great to have you with us.
Food, glorious food. May I have some more?
Yeah. Especially more of what we're talking about today,
because this is
a favorite from my childhood as well, clearly, as from yours.
Yeah, and you know, really the springboard into the story that I want to share today is the question, what was it that was always in your friend's freezer or refrigerator, or maybe you always saw the commercial for it on TV, but regardless of your best efforts, your parents, for some reason or another, just never got it for you. Was there anything in your life that meant so much to you that you didn't have access to?
You know, I'll tell you, when I was in, ninth grade, maybe, a girl invited me over to her house. This was perhaps unprecedented, right? And she invited me over to her house to do homework. Ostensibly,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
And we rode the school bus to her house. And as we got off the bus and we walked inside, her mother was waiting with a couple of Hostess pudding pies.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, those are things that were never at my house, but apparently her mom, anticipating her daughter bringing home a friend today, had set out a couple of pudding pies. And that's what I thought of when you asked that question.
Yeah. So one of the treats that, again, was not very frequently found in my freezer, when I say drumsticks, you might think of, you know, the device with which you bang on a drum, or you might think of a chicken drumstick.
Sure.
But I'm talking about the ice cream drumstick.
The ice cream
right?
treat.
And it
had
several different flavors.
Yep.
You could get the vanilla, you could get the chocolate fudge, or my favorite, the caramel. Right? And it always comes with the sprinkled nuts on top,
yeah.
Right?
It was like a prepackaged ice cream cone.
And it was always tricky to open that up and not have the nuts go everywhere.
Yep.
And you would try to. It's another one of those foods that we could have a totally different conversation about. Like, how do you eat your drumstick? You know? And for me, it's biting off all the nuts and chocolate on the top and then working my way down from there.
Yep.
But I digress a little bit because there was a girl that lived a few doors down, and we were good friends with them. And during the summertime, we would be outside playing with them every day. And her name was Jillian Ross, and she was a year younger than me. And at this point, I'm probably 7-ish years old.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, there's an evening where there are some drumsticks in the freezer. And for some reason, I didn't have access to them. Maybe my brothers purchased them because they were the ones that came to me with a little bit of a proposition. I don't know why they were interested in seeing this happen, but they were, I mean, any older brother is interested in humiliating their younger siblings, right?
Listen, a story that involves older brothers and a treat on the line, I can't wait to see where this is going.
So they liked to tease me about Jillian. They would say, oh, Jeffrey likes Jillian, which was not true. She had freckles and, you know, I just wasn't interested. Not that there's anything wrong with freckles. I had freckles. But she wasn't on my radar in that way, right?
At 7 years old.
Right. But at 7 years old, drumsticks certainly were on my
Absolutely,
radar.
Absolutely, yeah.
So when they came to me with this proposition of, Jeffrey, go over to Jillian's house, and if you give her a kiss, we'll give you a drumstick. And I feel like there was some moments of deliberation there and whether or not I should do that. I really didn't want to kiss Jillian, but I really wanted that drumstick. And in the end, that desire for the ice cream outweighed the lack of desire to kiss Jillian.
Oh, and you did it!
So I ran over there, and I just very quickly knocked on the door, got her attention, gave her the kiss, ran back home, and tried to forget the whole thing. I don't know if she forgot it. Maybe that scarred her for life. But one thing that I'll never forget is that I got that drumstick. I earned it. And it was totally worth it, Sam.
I'll tell you, in a just world, you'd have taken that drumstick over to Jillian's house and said, hey, sorry about that. You want to split a drumstick?
Yeah.
I know you didn't do that.
Ice cream was such a huge thing for me as a kid. I can think of in math class in second grade, my best friend and I would race each other to finish our math quizzes, right? Because there was always this promise of ice cream on the other end.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while, the school would pitch in to get the students some ice cream. And it didn't end there. Because once we finished the quiz, and I was usually the first one to finish, it was a race to see who could finish their ice cream the fastest. And whoever did that was the ultimate winner, and I typically won that too.
And of course, then having finished your ice cream, you got to stand around and watch everybody eat their ice cream, right? That's
yeah.
the downside, right?
And there are probably some tummy aches that I'm forgetting from having to eat them so quickly. But again, it was all worth it, Sam.
But still, the things we do for ice cream.
Yeah.
And that, I'm absolutely with you. And I am taken back to summertime memories, even wintertime memories. When's a time that's not a good time for ice cream, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anytime.
I could be bribed to do chores. I could be, yeah, ice cream's pretty good.
Yeah.
Stories about ice cream from Jeff Simpson. You know, we always hope that the stories that we bring you here on the show spark memories for you that you can share with the people that you love. Jeff, thanks so much for chatting about, gosh, the drumstick. What a memory.
Oh, I can't wait to go home and buy some for my kids and make them do something embarrassing to get one, right?
Great stories come into our lives in so many ways. Always a pleasure to chat with Jeff about a memory. And coming up, we've got a story from the Story Crafters called The Big Red Beet. You won't want to miss it. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's great to have you back with us on today's episode of The Appleseed. Up next, a story called The Big Red Beet from Barry Marshall and Jerry Burns, Ph.D., the duo that we know as the Story Crafters. We follow a family as they work together to pull a larger-than-life beet from their garden. Here are the Story Crafters on The Appleseed.
Do bugs bug you? Well, let me tell you a little bit about my house when I was growing up. My mom insisted that if it had 6 or 8 legs, then the creature had no redeeming value. If there was a bug in my house, my mom would pick up a can of Raid. She carried one on each hip, just like the Lone Ranger carries 2 guns in holsters. And she would raise up that can of Raid and psh, presto, the fastest draw on Long Island. No more bug.
Now, we wanted our son Zach's relationship with bugs to be calmer than that, so we tried to be easy around insects in our house, and we show them hospitality. One time in the winter, there was a wasp in our house, and rather than kill it, we fed it sugar water for weeks until the spring came and the sun was warm enough for it to go outside.
Still, I don't like bugs, especially spiders. And my cat Stella Luna thinks their only purpose in life is breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snack time.
Fall is a busy time around our house. We're stacking wood, we're canning and freezing food, we're getting the garden ready for the winter, and while we're working hard, our cat, Stella Luna, chases the last flies and wasps of summer all over the house, and she makes a big mess. One day, last fall, the weather was perfect outside. It was a crisp, clear day, and we really wanted to go outside and get some of the fall chores done.
Even the cat was antsy. She was chasing a wasp all over the living room. She was knocking down pieces of furniture right and left, and she almost tipped over a glass of water.
So we went out into the garden to clear out the last of the summer weeds and to do some harvesting.
The neighbors' children, Diego and Oscar, who are little kids, came over.
Their parents are always doing projects. Sometimes they renovate the house, sometimes they renovate the yard, and on that day, they had rented a 50-foot cherry picker truck. And they had climbed up all the way to the top, had strapped themselves to it, and were swinging their chainsaws trying to trim the tops of the very tall pine trees in their yard. They figured that their children would be a whole lot safer at our house, and that would be a little more normal for them to be with us. Little did they know what was going to happen.
I was the babysitter, so I went over to the swing set to play with them.
We even brought our cat out into the garden so that she'd leave the wasp alone and stop messing up the living room. As we were clearing out one of the beds, I noticed a huge bunch of greens growing there. I went over to it and I looked at it and I realized they were beet greens. That meant that we didn't harvest one of the beets from earlier in the season. Our beets were particularly big and sweet that summer. Since this bunch of greens was really big, I figured that this one last beet must be a pretty big one. So I bent down, I reached for the greens, and I heaved, and I pulled, and I yanked, and I lugged, and I strained, and I tugged. Wait, you know what? Hey, Zach, this is a story about a beet. You know what would really be great here is a beatbox. What do you think?
I guess so.
Okay. So I heaved, and I pulled, and I yanked, and I lugged, and I strained, and I tugged, but that big, red, bulbous beet didn't come up.
So Barry called me over.
That must be one big red beet. Jerry, would you give me a hand here?
Well, sure. So I stood behind him, and I held tight to his belt.
And I held on to the greens.
Then we heaved, and we pulled, and we yanked, and we lugged, and we strained, and we tugged, but that big, red, bulbous beet didn't come up.
That must be one big red beet. We really need more help here.
So we called over to Zach and asked for his help harvesting the beet.
I brought Diego and Oscar into the garden with me. They started to pick raspberries while I went over and held onto my mom's ponytail.
I held onto Barry's belt.
I held onto the greens.
Then we heaved, and we pulled, and we yanked, and we lugged, and we strained, and we tugged, but that big, red, bulbous beet didn't come up.
This is a really big red beet. We're going to need some more help here.
Just then, Diego and Oscar came running over. Oscar looked up and cried, "Help!"
Those boys are small. We weren't sure about this.
But just then, Oscar cried, "Help!" again. So he thought, why not?
They each grabbed hold of one of Zach's belt loops.
I held on to my mom's ponytail.
I held tight to Barry's belt.
And I held the greens. Then we heaved, and we pulled, and we yanked, and we lugged, and we strained, and we tugged, but that big, red, bulbous beet didn't come up. That must be one big red beet. We're really going to need some more help here. But who could we ask? We couldn't ask Diego and Oscar's parents. They had just brought a hydraulic drill with a 200-foot bit into their front yard to install a geothermal heating unit for their house.
What about the cat?
Barry looked at me.
And Jerry looked at me.
There were so many people already.
What good could a tiny cat do?
What harm could a tiny cat do? We might as well try.
So we shrugged. Okay.
So I chased Stella all around the garden until I caught her. When I caught her, I put her front paws in the bottoms of Diego and Oscar's shirts.
They held on to Zach's belt loops.
While I held on to my mom's ponytail.
I held Barry's belt.
And I held the greens.
Then we heaved,
and we pulled, and we yanked, and we lugged, and we strained, and we tugged, but that big, red, bulbous beet didn't come up. That must be a big, red beet. We really need some more help here.
Now, we've got to tell you a little detail. You see, when we all left the house to go outside, we didn't realize that the wasp that Stella was tormenting all morning had flown out right behind us.
At that moment, it was in the garden. It was actually buzzing around Stella's tail. It was probably thinking about getting her back for tormenting it all morning.
Diego cried, "Bug!"
We said, "Are you afraid? He won't bother you unless you bother him."
Diego shook his head and said, "Bug, help!"
How could a bug help us?
Diego and Oscar both cried,
"Bug, help!"
And before we could even react to that, Zach joined them for a third cry of,
"Bug, help!"
And believe it or not, no sooner did they say,
"Bug, help!"
for the third, and frankly speaking, the most magical time, that wasp landed on Stella's back like a cowboy riding a horse.
But it's so little. How can something so small help?
Diego and Oscar told us that they could see the wasp's legs gripping Stella's fur.
Since the kids really wanted to try it, we decided to do it for them. So the wasp held Stella's fur.
Stella held the bottoms of Diego and Oscar's shirts.
They held onto Zach's belt loops.
I held onto my mom's ponytail.
I held Barry's belt.
And I held the greens. Then we heaved,
and we pulled, and we yanked, and we lugged, and we strained, and we tugged, but that big, red, bulbous beet didn't come up.
That must be a big red beet. We really need some more help here.
Let's try it one more time.
And one more time, the boys cried,
Bug, help!
Then, just as we were about to haul on that beak, the wasp stung the cat.
Stella yowled! She gripped so tightly to the boy's shirts that one of her claws scratched Diego.
Diego screamed and pulled harder on my belt loops. I fell backwards, nearly crushing the boys and the cat, and I almost pulled my mom's ponytail right out of her head.
And I dragged Barry and his belt with me.
The cat fell in the green beans.
Diego and Oscar flew across the garden and landed in the spinach.
I was caught like a baseball in the midst of the collard greens.
I fell in the basil and found out how fragrant it was.
And I landed on the squash and I squashed it. And do you know what? That big red bulbous beet came up. It flew high in the air like a big burgundy ball, and it landed kersplop in the harvesting box, which meant that now, with the beet in the harvesting box was a
beet box.
So we gathered up the beans, the squash, the potatoes, the spinach, the basil, the collards, all the vegetables, and put them in the box with the big red beet.
We took them all into the house, and we dumped them in a big soup pot, and we made a great big vegetable stew.
I washed Diego's scratch and put a Band-Aid on it.
I went over to Diego and Oscar's house to invite their parents over to eat the stew and to hear the story about what happened. They had just finished installing a superpower nuclear research telescope on their roof, so they were pretty hungry.
We put some of the stew in Stella's bowl.
And we even put some beet juice in the lid of a jar for the wasp.
So my mother was wrong. There really is redeeming value to all creatures, great and small, including bugs.
And Stella has never chased a wasp again, to this very day.
And that's the story of
the big red beet.
The Story Crafters with a story called The Big Red Beet. We're always glad to hear from Jerry and Barry. And you can find more of their work at storycrafters.com. Up next, a story called The Mirror That Caused Trouble. This is Martha Hamilton and Mitch Weiss from a collection of stories called Stories in My Pocket Kids Can Tell. That collection is exactly what you think it is. It's stories collected and told by Martha and Mitch with the idea that kids, just hearing them a time or two, could learn and tell them themselves. Here's Martha and Mitch with The Mirror That Caused Trouble on the Appleseed.
The Mirror That Caused Trouble.
Long ago in Korea, a young farmer named Kim lived with his family far out in the countryside. One day, Kim went to the big city of Seoul. This was the first time he had ever left his little village. Kim was amazed by the bustling streets filled with shops and people. In one shop, he picked up a small, round, shiny object and looked at it. A man was staring right back at him. Kim smiled. And the man smiled back. Kim scratched his head. And so did the man.
Kim didn't realize he was looking into a mirror, since at that time, most people who lived in a small village had never seen one. He was so amazed by it that he bought one to take home.
When he returned home, he gave his family gifts and entertain them for hours with stories about the trip to Seoul. However, he put the mirror away, thinking he'd save it for a special surprise.
But the next morning, while Kim was working in the fields, his wife, Cho, happened to find the mirror. She picked it up, looked at it, and thought, "Oh no! Kim has brought a beautiful woman from Seoul to take my place!" And she began to cry. Kim's mother and father lived with them. Just at that moment, his mother walked into the room. When she saw her daughter-in-law crying, she said,
"Cho, what's the matter?"
"Just look," Cho replied, handing her mother-in-law the mirror. "Kim has brought home a beautiful young woman to take my place."
"Let me see," said Kim's mother.
She looked into the mirror and burst out laughing.
Cho, there must be something wrong with your eyes. This is no young woman. She's old, and what's more, she's not very good-looking.
The two women passed the mirror back and forth and continued to argue.
It's a young woman. Cho, don't be ridiculous. That's an old woman if I've ever seen one.
It was then that Kim's father entered the room. He saw his daughter-in-law crying and his wife laughing, and he said, "What's going on here?" After the two of them explained their sides of the story, the father-in-law said, "Let me see. I'll settle this." And he picked up the mirror and looked at it. "Have you two lost your minds? Kim hasn't brought home a woman, either young or old. Why, it's an old man with crooked teeth and a bald head."
They argued and argued. The daughter insisted she saw a young woman, the mother-in-law an old woman,
and the father-in-law an old man. Eventually, they realized they were never going to settle their argument. So they put the mirror down and went off to do their chores.
Kim and Cho had a young daughter who was happily playing with a paper dragon her father had brought home from Seoul. She found the mirror and looked into it. She thought it was another girl playing with her paper dragon. She cried out, "Hey, who said you could play with my dragon? Give it back right now!"
Just then, Kim walked into the house. When he heard what his daughter said, he asked her, "Who's taken your dragon?" His daughter handed the mirror to him. When Kim looked into it, he was furious. He shouted, "What kind of man are you, stealing from a little girl? I'll teach you a lesson." And with that, Kim gave the man in the mirror a big punch.
The glass shattered all over the floor.
And that was the end
of the mirror that caused trouble.
Martha Hamilton and Mitch Weiss with a story called The Mirror That Caused Trouble. Find more of their work at, get this, beautyandthebeaststorytellers.com. We're going to wrap up today with a story from Jay O'Callaghan from New England. Time magazine calls him a man of elegance, wit, and poetry, and we agree. And in this tale, Jay tells a story from his youth about a dinner party gone wrong, rife with doctors, Norwegian graduate students, and salmon thawing out in the bathtub. Here's Equations by Jay O'Callaghan.
Equations. I was sitting in the kitchen doing my algebra homework. The 10 problems in the 9th stumped me. It got me thinking about today. Miss Flapface had me up in front of the board. She was saying, "What kind of mind do you want? You want a mind that can find X. That's a mind. The Russians can find X. They've got the satellite up there. All of you go home and find X." I'm good at equations. I love equations. I'll give you an equation. Me sitting on my desk plus 10 algebra problems equals thinking about girls. Especially Monica Lawrence across the street. She's my girlfriend, but she doesn't know it. I like her even more than Rosalie Sussman. I was thinking about that, and my mother came into the kitchen, and mother said, "Look at the time. It's past 6:30. Oh, the Lawrence is having their party 7 o'clock. Dear, call Edie Lawrence. Tell her I'm going to be late for the party." I said, "Mom, the Lawrence is having a party in the middle of the week. You know the Lawrences, they're so kind. There are 20 Canadian doctors traveling all over the country looking at hospitals. They want to meet Craig Lawrence, great migraine specialist." So Craig said, "No, come to the house. We'll give you turkey and salmon. We'll call it the salmon and the bird." So I'm going over to make conversation, and Craig wants your father to come over and pretend he's a medical specialist. I said, "Mom, Dad doesn't know anything about medicine." "I know, that's the fun." "I'll go over and tell Mrs. Lawrence. Monica can help me with algebra." So I ran across the street, and oh, it was always fun to go to the Lawrences. We really liked them. Dr. Lawrence would get everybody singing, and Carrie Lawrence is 14. She has long brown hair, quickest laugh in the world. Monica, kind of my girlfriend. Mrs. Lawrence, her mind is so interesting. Last week, she was in our kitchen, and My mother was saying, Edie, we're having a big party November 6th, 7:30, you and Craig come. Mrs. Lauren said, I'll see if I have a lacuna in my calendar. I didn't know what a lacuna was, but it was just like Mrs. Lawrence. We knew she would come at 7:30. The question is, which month? She always got the hour right and the month wrong. Well, I ran up the walkway. Jones was nipping at my heels, rang the bell, and Monica opened the door, smiled as if I was a birthday present. Hey, Monica, help me with a problem. Oh, Mr. Lawrence, Mom's going to be at your party, the salmon and the bird. She's going to be late. She's just getting dressed now. You tell your mother that you almost gave me a migraine headache. You see, the party's on Wednesday. This is Wednesday. Oh, no, it's Tuesday. Monica said, Mom, it's Wednesday. All is lost. Monica opened the freezer, and there was a frozen turkey and two big frozen salmon. All is misery. Monica said, no, Mom, we've got 20 minutes. And then we'll bring them in, give them hors d'oeuvres for half an hour. We get almost an hour. She looked at me and said, help me with the potatoes. So Monica and I, we were peeling potatoes, and once in a while, by mistake, I would get her hand. Mrs. Lawrence called up the back stairs, Carrie, could you make a salad for 25? The door opened and in came the Norwegians, the graduate students at MIT, living in the top of the Lawrence's house. Helga was the first. Helga was 30, my favorite. He was 7 feet tall and he bent over like a sunflower, so his head was down with ordinary heads. And right behind him was Jens. He was 25, straight as a pencil. And instead of an eraser, he had brown hair that shot straight up. Jens was in love with American radio commercials. He came in singing, I'm Chiquita Banana, and I'm here to say, bananas have to ripen in a certain way. And behind him was Ulf. Ulf was the handsomest. Ulf had red cheeks and moved as if he was on skis. Mrs. Lawrence said, the three of you, I'm desperate. We have 20 Canadian doctors arriving any moment. Helga, you go and play the piano. Play Gilbert and Sullivan. Get them singing so they don't think about food. Jens, you'll be our bartender. We have some Heffenreffer beer in the cellar. Heffenreffer. It sounds Canadian. They'll love it. Ulf, you and I fly to the dining room. So we all got busy. Carrie was slicing tomatoes. Monica and I, we were peeling potatoes. Jens, he came up with the Heffenreffer beer. You can put them in a salad. You can put them in a pie. Any way you want to eat them, it's impossible to beat them. 7 o'clock, I looked out, said, they're not here, Mrs. Lawrence. We're in good shape, she said. They're coming from New York. With any luck, they'll have 4 flat tires. 7:15, I said, I'm sorry, but they're here, Mrs. Lawrence. A great big bus pulled up, and the doctors started getting off, and the first 4 doctors were women doctors, and one of them was the most beautiful redhead. She's a ravishing beauty. All the men doctors, they had dark suits, and they looked tired and serious. All 20 came up. She opened the back door and said, welcome to you, healers of the world. Well, that cheered them up. She shook every hand, go down the hall, into the living room, refreshments. The last doctor, he was a frumpy little doctor with a furrowed brow. He said, dog, naughty dog, bad dog, get away, dog. Madam, I'm afraid your dog doesn't heed. I'm so sorry, doctor. I think he speaks only Portuguese. I see. Well, I look forward to the salmon. So do I. I got crackers and cheese and said, Mrs. Lawrence, don't worry about Dr. Thunderbrow. I'll take care of him. So I went into the living room, and the doctors were in little quiet groups. They were quiet as undertakers. And right next door, the next room, Helga was playing his heart out. I am a pirate king. Nobody went in. I went over to Thunderbrow. Doctor, would you like crackers and cheese? I think I'll wait for the salmon, if you don't mind. I heard I'd like some, and I turned. It was the beautiful redhead. She took crackers and cheese, and I wanted to talk to her, but Ulf skied in front of me. He offered to get her wine, so we turned, and there was Jens being the bartender. He was pouring a Heffenreffer beer. Hey, Jack, boom, boom, the foaming cleanser. Boom, boom, boom. Floats the dirt right down the drain. Boom, 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 boom. A doctor asked for a scotch. Jens didn't know anything about being a bartender. He took a long glass and he filled it with scotch. And he filled the next glass with gin. This is going to be a loud party. I was back and forth. In the kitchen, mashing potatoes, and then handing out hors d'oeuvres, and then I went up the stairs to use the upstairs bathroom, and I went in. The bathtub was filled with water. And floating in the bathtub was a frozen turkey. And two frozen salmon. The salmon looked happy, but we were in trouble. I went into Monica's room. I got a piece of paper and wrote out of order and put it in the bathroom door, and I started down the stairs, and Helga had about six of the doctors singing. Poor wandering one. And there in the front hall, the beautiful red-headed doctor was dancing with a little bald doctor. And she was singing. It was turning into a party. I went down towards the kitchen and two of the doctors had shirt sleeves on. A real party. Well, I got the phone and I called Mom. Mom, where are you? It's 8 o'clock. You're not here. Dr. Lawrence isn't here. Dad's not here. We have a frozen turkey and two frozen salmon. Mom said, tell Edie, I'll go down to the village. I'll get a dozen cooked chicken. I'll try to get salmon. Mrs. Lawrence said, your mother is the savior. Just then in came Dr. Lawrence with his three-piece suit, looking so handsome. He put down the black medical bag. He had brown hair. It looked like a newly plowed earth. He hugged Mrs. Lawrence. They were the only neighbors who hugged. I loved seeing that. He said, Edie, I'm sorry, there was an emergency, but it's a great party. How are the salmon? Tend to your guests. The back door opened, and in came Dad, and Dad really was a scholar, red mustache and thick glasses. And Dr. Lawrence took Dad and introduced him to the two doctors in shirt sleeves. He said, this is my friend, Dr. Heffenreffer. Dad said, please call me Hef. Dr. Lawrence said, my friend Hef here is a kidney specialist, but I like liver and onions, too. And he brought Dad around, introduced him to little groups as a brain man, then he was a heart man, then he was an ear, nose, and throat man. And Dad made everybody laugh, but then they had to tackle Thunderbrow. He was in the corner of the living room, reading a little book. He had a soda water beside him. Dr. Lawrence tried to charm him and introduce Dad. Thunderbrow said, well, Dr. Heffenreffer, how nice. Oh, what's your specialty?
Well, I think it's pasta primavera.
I mean your medical specialty.
Well, I thought you knew from my name, Heffenreffer. If you had read the Heffenreffer study, you'd know there are only two cures to migraines. One is an exotic fish and the other is fudge.
Fudge, Dr. Heffenreffer, fudge. So, related to diabetes.
Yes, on the mother's side, twice removed, subtract five.
I see. He shoved the book at Dr. Lawrence. He turned around. Dr. Lawrence opened the book and he said he reads ancient Greek. We've got him. I followed Thunderbrow into the kitchen. Thunderbrow said, Mrs. Lawrence, I think your husband's having a little fun with me. May I ask how the salmon is coming?
Swimmingly.
Again, he turned, and this time Mother came in. She said, Edie, I've got a dozen cooked chickens, and I've got fish, but I couldn't get salmon. Dr. Lawrence came down. He said, Edie, everyone's happy.
I know, everyone's happy except Dr. Thunderbrow. I will not deal with him.
Edie, he reads ancient Greek. He'll love you.
I would rather take the star out of the Cyclops' eye.
Poor Mrs. Lawrence was brought down to try to charm Thunderbrow, and everybody else went into the piano room, and Dr. Lawrence got us all singing. He was singing the Mikado.
Defer, defer, he is the Lord High Executioner.
We were singing, and I went in to see how Mrs. Lawrence was doing. She had her back to me, so did Thunderbrow, and he was saying, Edie, I think it's wonderful you read ancient Greek so well. What's your favorite Greek play?
I like Antigone the best.
Antigone? Well, it's my favorite, too. She was doing very well. I went back, and now Dr. Lawrence had us going in a big circle. He was in the middle, and he was the Lord High Executioner. We all had to bow.
Defer! Defer!
So as we went in the circle, I went back in, and now Thunderbrow, Mrs. Lawrence had their heads together.
She was saying, I'm undone. I've let you all down. You see, we have the salmon for you, but they're floating frozen in the upstairs bathtub.
And Thunderbrow turned into a rabbit. Oh, dear lady, don't worry about it. No, these things happen
all the time.
Mother waved. The fish was ready, so we were all parading in.
Defer, defer,
into the dining room. And in came Mrs. Lawrence on Thunderbrow's arm. Dr. Lawrence said, I, the Lord High Executioner, have not one bird but 12 for you, and now the fish you've been waiting for. And Monica set the platter down. Dr. Lawrence stared. I thought we were having salmon. It seems to have turned into a haddock. And Thunderbrow said, what could be better, ladies and gentlemen? We can have salmon any old time, but ladies and gentlemen, look, I've read about this fish in Dr. Haffenraffer's famous study. This is the famous migraine haddock. Everybody laughed. They ate all the fish, and then the doctors wanted to sing. 12:30, finally, they stopped singing and they left. And Monica and I did those last two problems, and Mom and Dad and I stayed till after one cleaning up. And then we walked across the street, and I had a brand new equation. You take a bathtub with a frozen turkey plus two frozen salmon plus Mrs. Lawrence equals the kind of mind I want to have, and it's way beyond X.
Jay O'Callaghan finishing out a great hour of storytelling for us, an hour that has included Martha Hamilton and Mitch Weiss, the Story Crafters, a conversation with Jeff Simpson about ice cream drumsticks, and Dovey Thomason with Fox and Goldfinch. Find us online at byuradio.org/appleseed, and of course, you can email us at theappleseed@byu.edu. This hour was written by Kendra Hanna. Our audio engineer is Carly Robison. Our producer, Jeff Simpson. I'm Sam Payne. Can't wait to be with you again on the Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for an hour of stories, music, and conversation made for you and your family and brought to you by the Appleseed. The show is a production of BYU Radio. We'll see you next time.